America and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend, and it's fucking cold! So, I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Felipe Adolfo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Sologi. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Yo.
Hello.
It is also fairly cold over where they are.
Yes.
But, yeah. So, this episode for this week, it'll be for November 15th, 2019. And, wow, this was a kind of a packed week. A lot of major shit happened in a very, very small amount of time. And, damn, it's actually been kind of a challenge to, like, trying to go through it all because, amongst other things, we had a major country have its government coup d'etat. We have the first beginnings of the public impeachment hearings. A former member of Donald Trump's campaign team is now going to jail, probably. And it's one that we've all been waiting for, let's be honest.
For decades in some cases.
Yeah. And the new Sonic the Hedgehog trailer came out, and they fixed it, and now it looks like it might actually be halfway decent. But we'll be talking about all that. Plus, we've also got some Netflix and other movie news, and some other fun shit to go along with that. So, with that out of the way, let us get started, and let us start as we always do. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So PCs hate me. If you've been following me on Facebook for the past couple of weeks, you've probably been aware that I've been dealing with PC issues, mostly completely random hard locking.
Yeah.
Which is really, really irritating because it's one of those problems that's really fucking difficult to track down. And then my Windows install went poof. And then I put another drive in, and then the Windows 10 1909 update came down, and then the drive went poof. So that update borked two different installations. Granted, they were both clones of each other, so chances were pretty high that if it borked one, it was going to bork the other. But it's at this point, I think I have it fixed. Knock on wood. But it turns out if you have a UPS, and you guys are familiar with what those are? Uninterruptible power supplies. They're basically like batteries you put in line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, if you have your computer plugged into a UPS and the UPS itself starts dipping voltage,
mm-hmm.
PCs don't like that very much. And then they crash. The only thing that gave me the clue to check it out was that this is basically the only component that has kind of transferred with me for the past few years. And it's gone through thunderstorms. It's gone through brownouts. It's kind of led a pretty hard life. Yeah. So I just thought to myself, well, okay, what if I just take the PC off of the UPS and see what happens? And so far, no crashy.
Good.
So, yes. But I've also been playing PC Building Simulator, which I have managed to do because it's not crashing. I was working for Goblins. And they're trying to, resurrect Mephisto. And they want to rise as Red River 32 core process computer with 128 gigs of RAM and a RTX 2080 Ti in there. I don't know why, but hey, they're paying me. So
money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, they also wanted red lights for some reason, but hey, I can RGB the shit out of that thing. So that's what I'm going to do. They also want me to overclock it to 0 megahertz, which I don't think I'm going to be able to do. Yeah, I think that might be a little bit of a glitch in the job description, because that's not possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to overclock a computer to 0 megahertz, you turn it off.
Yep.
So, yeah. And so that's kind of been it for me. How about you, Pat?
So I still haven't been able to do much in the way of gaming or watching things this week, but I did make a delightful little discovery at one of the local grocery stores that they now carry Death Wish coffee.
Oh, wow.
And caffeinated decisions were made. And I greatly approve. So, yeah. Christened the new Mr. Coffee, and I am thoroughly wired whenever I need to be wired. It's nice.
Yeah.
They didn't have the Valhalla Java, unfortunately, but that's something I'm going to have to try pretty soon as well, even if I end up having to order it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something for me to talk about.
Yeah. I've never heard of that particular.
Yeah, it's Death Wish Coffee. They have a website and even subscriptions if you want. The Valhalla Java Odin Force Blend is one of their options that you can get there. And I'll actually put the link in the show notes, because this is good shit.
Yeah, might order some.
I'm not sure how available it is up in Canada, but we can find out.
Yeah. Might be something I have to order directly from them.
Yeah, well, they have a whole shop and everything, so. Yeah,
cool.
All right. Chris, what about you?
So I have at least signed up for the trial for Disney Plus. I've been trying out the last few days, and it has a lot of issues. Let's see. The subtitles are terrible. This is only on the PS4 app. It's what I'm using. They don't have subtitles. They have closed captioning.
Yeah.
So it's got the forest black background.
I've heard that the picture quality for some of the programs is not great.
Simpsons.
It depends. Some of it is just the first day or so. Like, there's a lot of server issues. So there'll be times like you're watching it and it just randomly like rewinds 10 seconds and you listen to the thing you just saw again. A couple things like that, but not really too much in the way of issues for that. But yeah, like the subtitle thing is annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when I was watching The Mandalorian, and it has baked in subtitles for the alien speech. And also the weird thing is those were not synced so well, so I would get the subtitles for what's going to be said like 5 seconds beforehand. Fortunately, nothing really got spoiled. Let's see, the organization stuff is not there at all. You can go into like an alphabetical list of all the shows or the movies that are in there. But the major issue is that some things are randomly named Disney, you know, whatever the rest of the name is, instead of what the name that people actually know them as. So it's like, okay, just a bunch of random stuff is listed under D now on there in the D section. And if you get too far down those lists, it's going to take you a while to get back to the top into the other categories. So you kind of have to back out of that section entirely, like switch to another section and come back. Lots of weird like stuff that probably shouldn't be there because it's Disney. They have more resources than anybody to put together a service like this that should be kind of fully baked at launch.
Throw computers at it.
Yeah, there's the Simpsons are all widescreen, cut to widescreen.
Mm-hmm.
So they lose jokes.
Until next year, apparently.
Yeah, early 2020, they're going to be able to put the 4:3 versions up. It's going to take them a few months to upload the old versions of the
shows.
That's
a lot of content.
Yeah, the first, like, 20 seasons. That's real annoying, and I saw some people showing screenshots of how the episodes are out of order.
Mm.
There's also an issue that for shows that are shows like that, they don't let you just continue where you left off. You're gonna have to go back and find the episode you left off on to continue. They might have changed it. They put out a patch every day for the app. That seems like it's more just fixing some of the bugs.
Have to ask, why didn't they go ahead and do that in the first place? I mean, these guys are going up against like Netflix, where all that shit's already baked in from the beginning. So
yeah, that's kind of the one downside I've seen is just not having everything kind of well designed. You can add stuff to a watch list, which with it all being Disney stuff, it almost kind of doesn't need it because you can just kind of like look up what you want. And like the search, you can just type Marvel and it'll bring up most of the Marvel stuff. Not everything is tagged Marvel, but having those holes in the MCU is kind of annoying. MCU movies. They do the Netflix thing. Like once you get to the credits, it generally like zooms out. And it's like, hey, you should check out this thing. And they'll do that during the MCU stuff. So it's like you could easily miss the mid or post credits scenes. Which I watched the first Iron Man, which reminded me of how horny Tony Stark is in that first movie.
Yeah.
He is constantly hitting on women for like the first hour of it. The cool thing they do is they have a lot of like extras for the movies and maybe some of the shows. Like Iron Man has a lot of the deleted scenes in there with unfinished CG, so it's a lot of hilarious stuff of watching like this like primitive polygonal version of Iron Man just like zooming around a screen or something stupid like that. I was watching Hocus Pocus and they have kind of hidden in the extras is a commentary version of the movie that has I think like concept art and other like behind the scenes stuff to show alongside the movie. That is pretty cool and that stuff should be surfaced more easily, so like when you go to watch movies like, oh, do you want to watch the movie or do you want to watch this special version? That kind of thing. Like Star Wars doesn't have the two most recent movies, Solo and The Last Jedi, because I think Netflix has those for a good bit longer. Like the watch list, it's literally just a list of icons, essentially. So I've kind of toyed with just deleting everything off of there and then just going through, I don't know, section by section, I guess. I'm trying to just add, like, here's all the Marvel stuff. Here's Star Wars stuff. Things like that. I noticed watching Phineas and Ferb that all the episodes are out of order. That show isn't too serialized, but it actually kind of is. Because there's, like, character relationships that just evolve slowly over time. Things like that. And that show is one of those kids shows where like all the episodes are like 11-minute episodes. Then they splice them into pairs to air on TV for 1.5 hour. And they kind of just put them in randomly. I don't think it was like that on the Netflix version, but it could be. But yeah, it's kind of out of order. So like the first episode is in I think episode 9 of the first season. It's like a lot of stuff like that where it's like. Just kind of being out of order, like characters are introduced that haven't actually been introduced in the canonical like order of the series. So like Doofenshmirtz's daughter is introduced, like she just shows up and just like not really introduced into who the hell she is and all that sort of stuff. There's a lot of weird stuff like that that comes with the out of order stuff there. And I had an issue. Well, it's when I signed up for the trial that it's like, we need to verify your account, and it didn't send out a verification email automatically. You have to specifically like queue that to be sent. So I was like, it was saying something like it could, you know, you'd get it in like 24 hours, and it's like 2 days later. And I'm like, where is this at? Because I just keep having this exclamation point on the profile in the app. It's like, you need to verify. It's like, I would if you guys sent me the damn email. And I looked closer on the site version of Disney Plus and just like click here to send it. It's like, oh, okay. You guys could have done a better job of surfing that stuff, or just do like any other site that wants to verify, is like send it when you sign up for the email, for the account, kind of stuff. But yeah, like the service overall, like it has a lot of good content there. The Mandalorian, I've been enjoying a good bit. The second episode's already up. I guess their new episode thing for that is every Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So the new one's up today. And that show has changed a bit with the second episode. There's like a new aspect to what the Mandalorian is doing now that is kind of way different than what you might have thought from the trailers. Not that the show is all that different, but just as like one new wrinkle, it's like, oh shit, okay, well, this is what's going on now. Yeah, and there's just stuff on there that's like nice archives of like, hey, here's some of the original Mickey Mouse shorts. I watched like Steamboat Mickey, which was pretty cool to see, which is in 4:3 like it was originally shown. Not that they could do it for anything else that I was watching that should have been in 4:3 like The Simpsons. But yeah, it's a solid service. Definitely worth kind of at least giving the trial a shot and seeing how it goes. But yeah, it definitely has a lot of work to go to get it up to what people like about other services in terms of like the UI and getting around and finding new stuff. Because sometimes, like I finished the two episodes of Mandalorian, it's like, hey, you should watch episode 5 of Star Wars. I was like, why the fuck would I watch that right after this? You know, like instead of, I forget when that one's set. I think it's set after Return of the Jedi. So, mm-hmm. You know, it could also use like a way of setting up playlists of like, hey, here's all these like 7-minute shorts, like the Pixar ones that are in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let me kind of go through all of these instead of like click one, then have to back out to the watch list if you had them there, or you just look through the recommended for what's next and like just keep clicking on stuff. There's a lot of stuff that they could do to make that a better experience, but for just pure watching their old movies and shows and such, and some of their newer stuff too, it's a good service. Let's see what else I've been doing. It's fucking cold. I was outside on it's Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Wind chill was at 16.
Yeah.
Which was not fun. Cold enough that when I was using my phone for a few minutes, it just shut off and it's like, we can't do anything anymore. which is a first for me. I think the last thing I remember happening with my phone when it was cold is like just having my pockets when I was doing stuff, having moisture kind of get onto it and just freeze. So I just pulled it out and it's like ice all over the phone. So that was fun, especially when I needed to use it. When I was doing some grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I just put it in my pocket, let it warm up a little bit, and it was working fine. But yeah, that's not great. I don't think we had some snow this week, but only like an inch or so. And that was like after some rain, so it was like ice with some snow on top of it. So a lot of the snow kind of could be easily dealt with for the most part. But yeah, let's see. Been doing some streaming this week. Tuesday and Thursday I streamed Sparklight, which was a game that was featured on one of the recent Nintendo Directs. Yeah. They're showing their indie stuff. It's from a team called Red Blue Games. Mm-hmm. And it's a really cool roguelike. It has a bit of Zelda to it in terms of being kind of top down, and you're taking on enemies and all that sort of stuff. But it's much different in pretty much most every other way, because your basic weapon is like a multi-tool. So you're kind of doing your slashes, but if you hold down your attack button, you do kind of a hammer smash. Mm-hmm. On the ground, which is good for some of the enemies are kind of like in one of the areas is kind of like Wigglers if there was the one weak spot that was like a button that you kind of smash with the hammer and you kind of take it out in one shot. That kind of stuff. And I've gotten some new... you kind of run into some mini temples that kind of introduce new gadgets that you get the ability to build later. some stuff like a bow that's not really for action. It's more for activating switches. There's this what they call a boom balloon, which is like a bomb on a balloon that you can kind of guide around. So you can do like get targets that it might be more out of the way than the bow could get. Or what I usually use it for is these rocks you find that have the sparklight, which is the main currency of the game, kind of in it, kind of like this blue gem looking, kind of mixed in with the rock, and you kind of blow that up and you get some gem, some of the sparklights, or it opens up like a passage to a little mini dungeon room kind of thing, a bunch of stuff like that. Kind of the main progress of the game is kind of you get the ability to go into one of the new areas, which the first area you get is called the Vinelands, like the main area. The second one's like the Golden Woods, which is like this kind of fall looking forest area. The third one's Acid Bog, which is, as you can guess, is like a bunch of wetter areas that are have lots of like acid pools that you walk into, you start losing health immediately, that kind of stuff. I just opened up the fourth area in the last stream, which is called the Sweeping Sand, something like that. It's basically a desert area, and there are a lot of fucked up enemies there. It's like versions of enemies you've seen before, like the one that will shoot bullets at you, but they are heat-seeking in that area. And enemies take more hits, that kind of stuff. So you kind of, as you're exploring, you're trying to earn the sparklight that lets you buy upgrades for yourself back on the main airship you go to whenever you die or beat a dungeon, that sort of stuff. And they give you some really cool upgrades. Like I have stuff that just adds icons to the map for the notable points you should be at, that sort of stuff. As well as I think the one I just got recently, basically map South Pole starting area. So you can kind of figure out where you need to go if you're trying to get to the next area you want to get to beat the boss. Kind of makes that a little bit easier. Yeah, the game kind of has a little bit like Zelda meets Rogue Legacy in a sense. Like you're kind of never losing progress when you die, because you just keep the sparklight you have and you can use that to get your upgrades and all that sort of stuff. And it's just it's a really well meant game, and I'm gonna keep putting some more time into it. I think I got two more bosses to beat in that, so I'm not too far off. Just have to keep working at it, getting new upgrades, and kind of pushing through. The game I got today was Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, the new game from Respawn. And that game is really cool. It's basically Star Wars Dark Souls, with the jank all included in there. Yes, it's a bit of a rough launch, not like it's crashing or anything. It just doesn't – it's just a bit of a rough, rough game in terms of – the way the animations work out, there's little areas where the performance dips a little bit. Stuff like you can see, like, oh, if they could have had like maybe two more months to work on this, two or three more months, they could probably iron some of this stuff out. So hopefully they get that going in the next few weeks, get working on some of that stuff. But yeah, it's a really cool game, because I think like one of the big issues I have with not really an issue I have with Dark Souls, just something that just doesn't click with me with Dark Souls. Just the setting doesn't really do it for me all that much. The sort of like gothic medieval kind of setting. So this kind of being more of a sci-fi Dark Souls, especially a Star Wars sci-fi, is more my jam. And the action's really well done. You got the lock on, the focus on managing your stamina. It's not as hardcore as Dark Souls is, but you do have to kind of pay attention a little bit. And there are upgrades and such that you have to do for that, that are, as you level up, you have your equivalent of the bonfires, like a meditation spot. You know, get your shortcuts, you're finding doors that opens up your way back to the other earlier areas, that sort of stuff. It's pretty well done from what I've played so far. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to putting some more time into it, and we're going to stream that tomorrow night.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to get some more time in with that. And yeah, it kind of feels, and it also kind of feels a bit, you can tell it's like Stig Asmussen's the director here. Mm-hmm. Because it has the, if you remember from the first couple Battle Wars where the balance bars, where you get between mm-hmm. your guests, you kind of have to make sure you're not leaning too far one direction or the other kind of thing. Yeah. It has those in there.
Yeah.
But you can also tell it's a respawn game because one of the first upgrades you get is wall runs. So wow. You can avoid a lot of those. So that's definitely like, okay, here's the God of War part of it, and here's the respawn part of it. Just give you more abilities to get around some of the kind of lesser parts of it. But for the most part, it's been pretty cool.
Hmm.
And that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
Yeah, I really want to play Jedi Fallen Order, like, really badly.
Yeah.
Because I've been hearing just a lot of good stuff from people.
Yeah.
It's basically the first, like, really good single-player Star Wars game we've had in, like, forever.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of, like, the... I forget what they're called. The ones that came out last year and they were just action games.
Star Wars Force Unleashed.
Yes. Kind of like that, but less just, like, boilerplate action.
Yeah.
Though it is kind of boilerplate Dark Souls, but I think that kind of brings with it a lot more interesting mechanics to it.
Also, I've been told it's got like a big kind of an Uncharted inspiration in there too.
Yeah, there's a lot of platforming in there.
Yeah.
So it kind of feels like maybe if you mash like Dark Souls with that, like Star Wars 1313, I think it was.
Yeah.
The cancel game, like if you mash the two of those together, like it kind of makes out in this kind of way.
Yeah. Like I said, God, I really want to play it so bad, but I just don't have the money right now.
Yeah. I assume there'll probably be a discount for Black Friday.
Yeah, maybe not, I hope so.
It's an EA game. So.
15-20%, I would assume.
Yeah.
Would be reasonable for that.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so as for me, I have been playing, well, still playing Death Stranding. And I'm still enjoying it greatly. And, you know, I said this on Facebook, and I'll say it here again. It's really funny because I genuinely do like this game. Like, I genuinely like playing it. I genuinely like taking part in all the collaborative aspects of the game, of, you know, helping build roads and leaving behind equipment that other players can use to help traversing the world better. It's just a bunch of fun, you know? I love it. And yet, there are people out there who hate this game so much, who think that nobody could possibly enjoy playing it, that there has to be some huge conspiracy, that we're bots or something. It's really hilarious, personally.
Yeah. People need to get over themselves.
Yeah.
Especially like the Pokemon people that have been going nuts this week.
Yeah.
Putting up... petitions on change.org to ask Trump to stop the game's release because it was going to cause massive damage to the economy or something like that.
Yeah. I hate gamers.
Oh, yeah.
I really do.
These people that put out their videos like, look how shitty this game looks, 400 times zoom, red outline on what they're looking at. And I'm sitting here like, I can barely see what the hell you're having issues with.
Yeah.
It's like, look at this person that's like 300 feet away disappearing as you get further away from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's a Pokemon game. You don't have anything to do with that person until you're talking to them right next to you.
Yeah.
It's not, this ain't, you know, fucking Skyrim where you can attack people from long distances. It's Pokemon.
Yeah. But anyway. But yeah, so like I'm on episode 5 now in Death Stranding, which I believe is about midway through the game. And they've actually now, introduced actual, lethal weapons now. So like assault rifles, shotguns, pistols, stuff like that. And I realized there's a reason why they actually wait until this point to actually give you these weapons. Because the game is trying to kind of put into your head that dying in this game actually has a very big impact on the world around you. Because again, after the Death Stranding, if a person dies, they become a BT. And because BTs don't really want to like float around in the ether, they want to try and re-enter their body. If that happens, then it causes a void out, which is basically like it basically just leaves nothing but a smoking crater. And in fact, that's the reason why, like, all people, when they die in this universe, they have to be cremated, because otherwise, usually within 48 hours, they'll become BTs and cause a void out.
Imagine if it was online enough where when somebody dies, they show up as a corpse that you have to take to an incinerator.
Yeah.
Or else they cause a huge crater in your world and potentially take out points of interest.
Yeah, but see, here in the thing, since you now have lethal weapons when you're attacked by, like, mules, which are those you don't know, in Death Stranding, mules are basically like these roving gang of bandits that
terrorists.
Well, no, I've actually encountered the actual terrorist at this point now.
Okay.
The mules are basically just bandits who try to steal your cargo so they can deliver it and get the cash themselves. Okay. But the actual terrorists actually want to kill you because they also have lethal weapons. And the thing about these terrorists is they want to cause void outs because they're separatists. And their whole way of operating is to try and cause as much chaos as possible so that it won't, you know, it'll stop people from joining up with bridges and, you know, completing the chiral network and all that stuff. But I also experienced, okay, so do you guys remember when the trailers came out and there was that whole segment about you suddenly being like in the middle of like a World War One or World War Two battlefield? With, like, all the soldiers around, and there's, like, a tank that's, like, stuffed with, like, whale guts and shit.
Yeah,
well, I find out what that actually is. In episode 4, you get caught up in a chiral storm, and it basically knocks you over into another timeline that is basically happening during World War II. And so, as you're trying to escape this place, you're basically having to duck behind bunkers from machine gun fire. You got to walk alongside a giant tank to help block the shots. And then eventually you have to fight this guy called the Veteran who has control over these, like, soldier corpses. It is really fucking weird, like the rest of this game is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but I love it so much. I think I might be able to start doing my, start writing my review sometime next week. So everybody keep an eye out for that. What else? Oh yeah. So, there's been this, sort of alternate history project that I've been helping with. I didn't actually create it or really write any of it. I'm basically in charge, well, not in charge of, but I contribute to the wiki for it. And it's called Reds. Well, the complete title is Reds, A Revolutionary Timeline. And basically, it's a alternate history timeline in which, you know how, like, with a lot of alternate timelines, there's usually, like, that one pivot point where there's, like, a big butterfly effect and it just changes, like, you know, it just radiates outwards and it basically changes all the other historical events.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Reds kind of sort of started like that, but the three main writers of the timeline that we call the Troika, they have experience in sociology. So they've actually gone back and sort of rejiggered some stuff so that it makes a lot more sense. Because the original sort of pivot point in the timeline was was the non is William McKinley surviving his assassination. Those you don't know, William McKinley was assassinated in the early 20th century, and his vice president took over after that. Do you guys know who his vice president was?
I don't.
Teddy Roosevelt. And Teddy Roosevelt was like the big progressive Republican. He's the he was the famous trust buster, founder of the FDA, he instituted the national park system. He helped like give the labor movement more of a voice, stuff like that, right? Okay. Well, the idea in Reds originally was that since McKinley's assassin ends up getting caught by this racist-ass cop, because for those who don't know, William McKinley's assassin was this Polish anarchist. What happens is that progressive politics, as we more or less know it, was kind of never really got the sort of major governmental attention it had at the early 20th century that helped stave off a lot of the like really awful labor unrest that would come about. But they also added a couple of additional things, including, for example, they have it where a key sort of schism within the American labor movement doesn't happen, which means that the labor movement in the United States is much stronger and more expansive and has more of an influence than it did in our timeline. Furthermore, in the late 1800s, Leonard Wood is actually elected president instead of, God, I'm trying to remember who the guy was he was going up against. But what happens is that Wood ends up vetoing a very popular piece of legislation, which basically angers pretty much both houses of Congress to the point that they decide to amend the Constitution so that it becomes more of a vaguely a bit more like a parliamentarian type of system. I mean, it's still very much the American Congress, but like sort of the way how majorities and stuff work in parliaments start becoming a more major thing in American politics. And basically what happens is all this happens. There's like, labor and the socialist movement are much more influential and, they're more effective. They have a larger base. President Grover Cleveland, President Grover Cleveland, in order to sort of, as a measure of like international solidarity, he basically enters the United States into World War I a couple years earlier than it does in our timeline, which means that most of the American soldiers end up experiencing the really awful parts of the war. So like the Somme, the Fields of Verdun, all that shit. And as that's happening, the Roaring Twenties start. It's kind of complicated. What you really need to know, though, is that by the time all of this gets to where the timeline is now, in 1932, the socialist movement starts to build like heavily. It gets heavy influence from the newly formed Soviet Union, and especially during what's known as the Third Period, which was this historical thing. I won't get into it, but basically in 1932, the Workers' Party of America ends up winning the presidential election. And during the few months of the former Herbert Hoover's administration, Douglas MacArthur and one of his compatriots actually intimidate Herbert Hoover into basically suspending the Constitution and instituting martial law. So Douglas MacArthur basically heads up this reactionary military regime called the National Salvation Front. It's basically, they then basically purge like the heads of the Workers' Party of America, which by this point in time in American history is called the Workers' Communist Party of America. And they end up basically decapitating, not literally, but figuratively, the leadership of party, including Norman Thomas, who was the president-elect. This basically causes a second civil war, which ultimately leads to MacArthur and the National Salvation Front having to flee to the island of Cuba to basically set up a rump state there. And the United States of America, the old United States of America, is dissolved. And in its place is the Union of American Socialist Republics. And it gets more complicated from there. But it's really awesome. It's a timeline I've been a fan of for a long time, and I've actually started doing work on it now. So if anybody is curious, I'm going to go ahead and do this and link this in the chat here. This is on the wiki. If you go to the recent changes on the wiki and you see any changes made by Adonisus, that's Adonisus, that's me. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and put the link into the message here, or I will as soon as I can get this. God damn it, Skype!
Yeah, always a popular refrain. God damn it.
Yep. Yeah, hold on. Just a second. God, I'm trying to... There we go, okay. Yeah, hold on. I need to, let's see. Yeah, okay. I'm going to call... Okay, here we go. Okay, this is the, from the wiki right here. This is not one of the articles I wrote. This was done by the creators, but I've got some articles on there. But yeah, that has the UASR's flag and their coat of arms and their history right up until I think around 1940. Hmm. So, and yes, that's that little symbol there. The what's like the combination of like a cogwheel and a grain of you know, like a wreath of wheat, and there's the hammer with the compass and everything. That's the official emblem of the UASR. Yeah, but anyway, that's something I've been working on. And oh yeah, one last thing before we move on. Recently discovered the works of a Korean artist by the name of Kim Young-yi, and I fucking hate him, and I'm gonna show you why. Okay. All right, give me just a second. I'm going to show you an image he did early last year, specifically for Blizzard. Some of you have probably seen this if you're big Warcraft fans. But I'm going to go ahead and show you this very large drawing that he made. I'll go ahead. I'll just put the site link on here because it's also got the what the finished drawing looks like, as well as like the time lapse video of him working on it. All right, I'm going to show it to you here. Here we go. All right, go to that link. Okay, see that picture there?
Mm-hmm.
See that image? Okay, just take a minute to sort of drink it in. See how elaborate it is, and just all the amazing inking he does.
Yeah,
and just it's like, holy crap, this dude must have just like done so much fucking prep work and shit for this. Like, I mean, just the sheer way the composition in and of itself is like, it must have been fucking insane, right?
Yeah.
No preliminary sketches. No fucking frames or anything like that. He straight up went pen to ink, straight to paper, and that's it.
Straight from his head to the pen.
Exactly. And they even have the time-lapse video at the bottom to show you how he did it. Again, no preliminary sketches, no fucking nothing. God is a dick and life is not fair.
That is just an inordinate amount of talent.
And he's not just that one picture. This dude is insanely fucking prolific. Like, okay, fuck it. You know what? I'm going to link to his website here. Specifically, I'm going to link to the portfolio on his website. And the thing is, most of this shit, I think, is just from last year. Look. Just that right there. All of this shit. Just him. No fucking preliminary sketches or nothing. Any sketches that you do see there were one time with just one fucking pencil.
Fucking hell.
It should be illegal to have this much talent in one person.
Oh, well, I suspect he's going to make a pretty good living.
I fucking hope he does. It's goddamn. Anyway. All right. So, anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
Yeah, well, I'm good.
All right. So, So, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today, I want to tell you a little story. It's a story about a country in South America, how they elected a left-leaning social democratic president. This left-leaning social democratic president wanted to nationalize one of their major industries that was essential for the world economy so that his people could directly benefit from it through welfare, welfare and universal health care and education and stuff like that. How this pissed off the governments of the West, including the United States, and how it inspired a military junta to take power, overthrow the democratically elected president, and to institute what would be decades of cruel, violent, reactionary repression. I am not talking about Bolivia. I'm talking about Chile, 1973. You know how on the internet you occasionally get those fucking helicopter memes?
Yeah.
Do you know where that comes from? It comes from the reign of Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet. Pinochet ran Chile from 1973 to 1990. He was its undisputed dictator, and he got there partly because the U.S. helped him do it. So you have to go back a couple of years from there to 1970 and talk about a gentleman by the name of Salvador Allende. Salvador Allende was a lifelong member of the Socialist Party of Chile. He had worked as a mayor, a senator, a minister to the people. And then in 1970, he was given presidency during a tight three-way race in Chilean parliament that ultimately resulted in no one party getting a majority. So he ended up sort of getting it through what I guess you could call it like a popular front, where a bunch of like the other parties made coalitions with some of the bigger parties, and his just ended up to come out on top. So he then started doing some various social things. He started instituting universal health care, universal education, child rearing, stuff like that, nutrition programs. He started doing infrastructure stuff. And obviously, all of this stuff didn't go off without a hitch. Let's be honest, when you do wide-ranging welfare-type stuff like that, you're going to step on somebody's toes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just look at all the shit we have to put up with here in the U.S.
Yeah.
And, by the way, that's a reminder that if Bernie Sanders does manage to become president, he's basically going to have to deal with the same shit. But that's another story. So all this happens, and then it comes about that Allende wants to nationalize Chile's copper industry. Now, you guys know how valuable copper is, right? Right.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It is a major, major fucking mineral that is used in just about everything modern that we appreciate these days. And Chile just so happens to sit on a fucking boatload of the stuff. So, as you can imagine, this made the copper industry within Chile and without Chile very, very angry. The fact that up to this point he had also been making nice with Leonid Brezhnev and Fidel Castro also meant that the U.S. really fucking hated this guy. So the CIA then decided to aid the aspects of the Chilean military that didn't like Salvador Allende with a military coup d'etat. And, you know, on top of that, Chile also suffered a lot of really major economic sanctions that were partly instigated by President Nixon and Henry Kissinger. In fact, Nixon himself said he wanted to make the economy of Chile scream. Hmm. Yeah. And then finally, in 1973, on the day of September 11th, wow, how is that is like a fucking goddamn.
Think about it, yeah.
Yeah. Allende wanted to put out a plebiscite because there had been a sort of kind of a controversy that had come up because the Chilean Congress had accused him of essentially they accused him of okay, these were the what his government was accused of. It was ruling by decree, refusing to enforce judicial decisions against his partisans, ignoring the decrees of the Independent General Comptroller's Office, sundry media offenses, including, quote, usurping control of the national television network and applying economic pressure against those media organizations that are not unconditional supporters of the government, allowing its socialist supporters to assemble with arms and preventing the same by its right-wing opponents, supporting more than 1,500, quote, illegal takeovers of farms, illegal repression of the El Teniente miner strike, and illegally limiting emigration. Not immigration, emigration. You know, leaving the country. So Allende said, okay, obviously you guys are angry, so I think we're going to do a plebiscite. Let's do a plebiscite. You guys know what a plebiscite is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To vote. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like, but unfortunately he never got to get it, because September 11th, 1973, with the help of the CIA, the Chilean military staged a coup d'etat. At the end, he was barricaded inside the, what's it called, the, he was barricaded inside the, I forget what it was called. What I do know is that he had a radio connection that he used where he actually was able to give his last speech to all of his people. It was La Moneda, which was the presidential palace. As he's making the speech, and by the way, this speech was like was recorded and you can actually listen to it on YouTube. He gave his farewell speech to Chileans on live radio, actually spoke of himself in the past tense because he knew he was fixing to die. And as you listen to this, you can actually hear like gunfire and explosions in the background. Like it is clear as day. And basically his last words were, "Workers of my country, I have faith in Chile and its destiny. Other men will overcome this dark and bitter moment when treason seeks to prevail. Keep in mind that, much sooner than later, great avenues will again be opened through which will pass free men to construct a better society. Long live Chile, long live the people, and long live the workers." He then put a barrel of an AK-47 that Fidel Castro had given to him as a gift and pulled the trigger. They think. That's what the consensus is. It's never been proved. It's often been suspected that he was actually executed by one of Pinochet's soldiers. And they actually reopened that investigation back in 2011 and still came away with the idea that he committed suicide. But with his death, the coup plotters then dissolved the popular assemblies. They suspended the constitution indefinitely and instituted a cruel military junta that would rule until 1990. The story does, of course, have a happy ending, though, because eventually Chile did manage to throw aside its military junta. Allende's daughter, Isabel Allende Bussi, is actually still alive, and she's a member of the Chilean Senate. There's actually statues and a holiday dedicated to him and his memory. And his memory is still very strong in Chile. And if you've been hearing the news recently, you probably know right now that Chile is in the midst of another revolutionary situation. And Allende's memory lives large in that. Because here's the other thing you need to know about Pinochet in Chile. Chile is where neoliberalism was born. Milton Friedman and the Chicago School, Chile was their stomping grounds. Chile is literally the only country in the Western world where water is privatized. And hopefully neoliberalism will be where Chile will be where neoliberalism finally dies. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Now then, with that out of the way, it is now time to start the show proper. And as always, we have to talk about the assholes of the week. And our first assholes of the week is the Saugus High School shooter. Because again, we had another school shooting this week. Unfortunately, this one could have been far worse.
Yeah, there are a couple of people that are injured. So far, it seems like it's just the two. Still, this one's a lot weirder than most because there's no like manifesto or anything from the shooter.
Yeah.
They still don't know like where the weapon came from because they know that he potentially had access to his dead father's guns, but they were all still there. So they're still like analyzing the gun to figure out like where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff like that where this one doesn't really have any clear like message to it other than I believe the shooter who shot himself at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And is in critical condition himself. It was his birthday when he did this. So yeah, it's a bit weird. Like no suicide note or manifesto, anything like that. To give people like an idea of like what the point of this was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a pretty clear representation of what I would call a senseless act because you can't make any sense of it.
No.
Yeah.
We know the dude was a Boy Scout, and that's about it.
Yeah.
And so they're probably trying to go through, like, phone or computer stuff.
Yeah.
See if there's anything, you know, Facebook pages, Twitter, whatever. Yeah, we still don't even know, like, the identity either. Which is good, because don't really need to know specifics like that, but, you know, why this happened.
Mm-hmm.
That'd certainly be nice. Yeah, all we know are the two victims, Grace Ann Mulberger and Dominic Blackwell, 15 and 14.
All right, that's our first asshole of the week, and now for our second assholes of the week: the coup d'état in Bolivia. So, for those of you who had been paying attention to the news, you know that there had been some unrest that had been happening in Bolivia. So their former president, Evo Morales, you guys may know him. He was the one of the major figures of what was called the Latin American Pink Tide. Mm-hmm. And along with guys like, you know, Hugo Chavez and Maduro and all those guys. Now, Morales was the first indigenous president of Bolivia, in a country where the indigenous are actually the majority of the population. And he was – remember that what I was talking about earlier about how Allende was wanting to nationalize the copper industry?
Yeah.
You know what Morales was getting ready to nationalize?
Hmm.
Lithium.
Ooh.
Do you want to know why that might be a problem for some people?
Because you make a lot of money out of that, and it's used in just about everything technical these days.
Yep. And Bolivia sits on a lot of it. And yeah, so obviously Morales is not perfect, and part of the reason the issues came out earlier was because of a really like close presidential race that Morales actually won, but you know it was close enough that people called shenanigans. He said, "Okay, we'll have another. I'm okay with doing like another election if that's what you guys want." He didn't get the chance to because the military overthrew him. And currently, the quote-unquote interim president is this woman named Anez. I want to make something very clear about the people behind this coup. This was not a popular rebellion of any kind, okay? Mm-hmm. This was a reactionary coup d'etat. And the people behind it are honest to God fascists and phalangists, and some of them are even honest to God neo-Nazis. There have been like 1,200 deaths already of people like these scumbags going door to door rounding up indigenous and Morales supporters. The current interim president, Anez, she has said that she dreams of a Bolivia free of satanic Indian practices. She says that all the Indians need to go back to the mountains and leave the cities to them. And she said this shit on like Facebook and Twitter. Now, her administration has been doing a lot to try and scrub this shit off of the internet so that there's no evidence of it. But it's there, okay? It was there. It exists. Go look at it for yourself and do not let these motherfuckers forget it, okay? And as I speak, there are thousands upon thousands of people in the streets of Bolivia screaming for Morales to be given his rightful place as president back to him. In fact, just a few minutes ago, news came out that a group of Morales supporters apparently stormed a local police station and got a hold of the armory and are apparently headed to the Capitol. So we're going to see how that works out. But good thing is Morales actually got out of the country. So he's actually, unlike Allende, Morales is alive and he plans on fighting another day. And yeah, just read that article. I've got linked there. It is a fucking travesty. And do not, here's the thing. Don't let the fucking mainstream media try to twist this either, because that this was a coup d'etat. There is no other way to describe it. Okay? This was not a popular uprising ousting an unpopular president or anything like that. That is not the case. Okay? So, yeah, that's about all I got to say about that. Remember what I said earlier when we said just a whole bunch of shit happened this week?
Yeah.
That's one of them. But anyway, so really we just got to cross our fingers and hope for the best with that one. But we do have our heroes. Well, we say these are heroes of the week, but honestly, these guys are like more of the enemy is my friend type thing, even though these guys are absolute bastards on their own.
Yeah.
So Donald Trump Jr. has a new book out. It's called Triggered, because of course it fucking is. And he was holding a Q&A session that was hosted by Charlie Kirk and Turning Points USA. And, you know, he was expecting, he was expecting another group of Trump cultists, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wrong. Because a lot of the Trump cultists have jumped ship and found a new leader. An absolute scumbag by the name of Nick Fuentes. And their partisans showed up and basically booed him out of the room.
Yeah, he was at UCLA this past Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the weird thing is, I guess his new girlfriend is Kimberly Guilfoyle, who's one of the Turning Point USA people. And so, let's see, the appearance backfired. When his own supporters, diehard MAGA conservatives, raise their voices, most likely in protest, and end up drowning him out barely 20 minutes into an event scheduled to last 2 hours. They were mad at he and his girlfriend would not take questions for the Q&A, so there were loud shouts of USA and Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
When they were getting to that part. And yeah, the book is called Triggered, How the Left Thrives on Hate and Wants to Silence Us. And the irony of it being his own audience doing it to him. 450 people were there. It's been told they were not allowed to ask questions due to time constraints. First, Trump and Guilfoyle tried to ignore the discontent, which originated with the fringe group of America Firsters who believe the Trump administration has been taken captive by a cabal of internationalists, free traders, and apologists for mass immigration.
Mm-hmm.
When the shouting would not subside, Trump Jr. tried and failed to argue that taking questions from the floor risked creating sound bites that left-wing social media posters would abuse and distort. Nobody's buying that. In minutes, the entire argument put forward by the president's son that he was willing to engage in dialogue, but that it was the left that refused to tolerate free speech, crumbled. I'm willing to listen. Trump began, Q&A, Q&A. The audience yelled back, "We'll go into the lion's den and talk." Trump tried again, then opened the Q&A, came the immediate response. Guilfoyle, forced to shout to make herself heard, told students in the crowd, "You're not making your parents proud by being rude and disruptive." She and Trump Jr. left the stage moments later.
Yep.
The fiasco pointed to a factional rift on the Trump-supporting conservative right that has been growing rapidly in recent weeks, particularly among Zoomers, student age activists, on one side are the sponsors of Trump Jr.'s book tour, Turning Point USA, campus conservative group with the track record of bringing provocative right-wing speakers to liberal universities.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side are far-right activists, often referred to as white supremacists and neo-Nazis, though many of them reject such labels because they know it's true, who believe in
exactly
slamming the door on all immigrants, not just those who cross the border without documents, who want to end America's military and diplomatic engagement with the wider world.
Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, these guys are basically led by Nick Fuentes, who is an absolute bastard of a human being. Like, genuinely just awful. He's mark my words, he's basically going to take Richard Spencer's place very soon. So,
yeah. You know, just... and, but they're turning their gaze on Trump Jr. and people like Charlie Kirk.
Yep.
Are also incredibly shitty people.
So basically, they're just eating themselves, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So hooray. Because that's ultimately what fascism results in, all of the crowd turning on each other.
Yeah.
So.
And that's just great to see.
Mm-hmm. All right. So with that out of the way, it is now time to start the proper show proper. And first and foremost, ladies and gentlemen, the public impeachment proceedings have begun. And it is glorious. So to start off, Rudolph Giuliani announced that he wanted to start an impeachment podcast with a conspiracy outlet from the Ukraine.
Yeah, I think this is... Let's see. I think it's actually The Hill.
Oh.
that were running his conspiracies about Ukraine.
Ah.
Like, that's basically the thing here.
Mm-hmm.
See, after John Solomon ran columns in The Hill that touched off a disinformation campaign against Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden, the publication had discussions with Rudy Giuliani mm-hmm. about a business venture. And this is involving a podcast that is kind of a hilarious idea because one, Giuliani he runs his own like tech security firm.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows nothing about podcasts. So he's like trying to recruit people at The Hill to help him do all this stuff. See, less than 4 months after Solomon's reporting, Giuliani and The Hill actively pursued a deal to create a podcast together with Solomon acting as an intermediary. According to emails obtained by ProPublica, the project, which never came to fruition for unclear reasons, featured the former New York City mayor interviewing various public figures. Emails include recordings of lengthy chats with the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, and a retired Marine Corps general named James T. Conway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like a lot of shit here, and I've seen the reports of people him just talking loudly to somebody at a restaurant about this idea. And, of course, people overheard it. And they're like, what the fuck is he talking about? And just kind of comes off as, like, as an old man that hears people talking about the podcast and, you know, wants to get on it to do some dumb show about the impeachment stuff, like the counter program, the impeachment stuff. And it's just, like, just one of the more ridiculous things. And, of course, he has no idea how to respond to any of this. He tweeted out, let's see what this tweet says here, tweeting out, like, blacked out email saying, total smoking gun, this is 1 month before Joe Biden got the prosecutor fired, and all this sort of bullshit he's been doing over the past couple of weeks. It's just really Joe being his old man self.
Yep.
It's just a very stupid story.
Yeah. All right. So now for the first day. So we had first public hearings on, I think it was Tuesday.
I think Wednesday.
Oh, it was Wednesday. Yeah. Yeah. So amongst other things, William Taylor, who sort of embodied all that is supposed to be good and right with America, gave his statements where he basically revealed some bombshells. Amongst other things, he revealed that a member of his staff actually heard Donald Trump on the phone asking about the, quote, investigations. By now we know what these investigations are about, right?
Yeah.
Biden and all that stupid shit. And it turns out that, Trump was on the phone with Ambassador Sondland about talking about, though. He says here, following the call with President Trump, the member of my staff asked Ambassador Sondland what President Trump thought about Ukraine. He responded that President Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden. For those who don't know, Bill Taylor is now the diplomat in charge of the U.S. Embassy in Kiev. So, yeah. So we start with that bombshell. Jim Jordan, the guy. A great individual who willingly stepped aside and, you know, did nothing as children were being molested.
Yeah, who had a new allegation come out pretty recently that one of the referees working one of their events was in the showers, I think, and the doctor that did this stuff kind of walked up to him and started just masturbating in front of him. And he went and told Jim Jordan, he's like, eh, whatever.
Mm-hmm. And things yeah,
that people
he,
do.
Yeah. So he accused the Adam Schiff, who's currently heading up this hearing, that he knows who the whistleblower is. He may and he may not. That doesn't really matter. It's not relevant. And basically, this is the reason why some of the Republicans wanted to get Jordan onto this hearing in the first place, so that they could act as a distraction, basically.
Yeah.
And for all intents and purposes, it doesn't look like it's working.
No.
So then the Republicans on the panel then tried to basically they took their first shots at the witnesses. Devin Nunes was involved. He bombarded them with a bunch of conservative buzzwords, basically.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton, Democratic National Committee, Fusion GPS. You know, the Obama stuff about Russia, Ukraine meddling in the 2016 election, you know, all the hits.
Yeah, because again, that's, you know, I'm like, God damn, it's been almost 3 years now, and they're still harping on Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, she's not president.
Yeah.
She hasn't been president. What about isn't all they have left?
Yeah. Then there was like a brief scuffle over House rules, because, again, they have to attack the process because that's all they've got left. Then the GOP council then decides to zero in on the Hunter Biden stuff.
because that's super relevant.
Mm-hmm. Steve Castor, Minority Counsel, queried Bill Taylor about Trump's attitude towards Ukraine. Let's see. Both Taylor and Kent have said that they knew little about Biden. Castor's likely intent, however, was to promote the idea that Trump had a legitimate concern about Biden and allegations of corruption in Ukraine. For the record, if that is true, it still doesn't excuse all of this shit. Because that's not the president's place to do shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, if the Bidens have actually done something illegal, then, you know, issue a warrant and have them tried in a court of law.
Yep.
But anyway, during the GOP counsel questioning Taylor, during a line of questioning about what Taylor had described as an irregular supplemental channel of U.S. policymaking towards Ukraine, Castor sought to suss out why Taylor felt the group was inappropriate, laying out the main characters in the so-called irregular channel, including former U.S. Special Envoy for Ukraine Kurt Volker, Sondland, and Energy Secretary Rick Perry. Castor began on Volker. In fairness, this irregular channel of diplomacy, it's not as outlandish as it could be. Is that correct? And Taylor responded with a laugh. It's not as outlandish as it could be. I agree with that much. Then, prior to the hearing, President tweeted out Never Trumpers, an apparent attack on the two diplomats that were testifying. Bill Taylor, of course, is one of them. The other, of course, is Kent. So Eric Swalwell, Democratic representative, asked both of them if they were indeed Never Trumpers. Kent said he was a career professional who'd served in government under three Republican presidents and two Democratic ones for 27 years. And Taylor was more blunt, just saying quickly, no, sir. So, yeah, basically, there was like the big sort of elephant in the room, which was Russia, because you know, some of you know, Ukraine and Russia have been having these major conflicts with each other over the last few years. And America, well, the Trump administration in particular, is trying to kind of use it as like a bargaining chip, I guess you could say. Over and over, Democrats, as well as the two U.S. diplomats testifying Wednesday, bring up Moscow and how the Kremlin is poised to benefit on a weakening of U.S.-Ukrainian relations. Taylor, in particular, spent significant time describing how crucial it is for Washington to keep sending military aid to Ukraine, saying the European country is, quote, on the front line of the global competition between America and Russia. Schiff began his opening statements by talking about Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Republicans raised Russia too, but in a different context. Nunes blasted what he said was the hoax that Trump conspired with Moscow to win the 2016 election. And according to William Taylor, Ukraine wasn't just business for Trump. It was literally a quid for pro, quote, pro type thing. And according to Taylor, Taylor repeated his earlier testimony that Sondland had explained to him that Trump wasn't going to give Ukraine they needed, including military aid, if they didn't do something for him. You guys know what that translates to, quid pro quo. It's how businessmen think, said Sondland, himself an hotel owner who was given an ambassadorship after donating $1 million to Trump's campaign. But it became clear that when it came to the Ukraine, it wasn't just about business. Trump, who apparently suspects Ukraine trying to undermine him in the 2016 election, had a feeling of having been wronged by the Ukrainians, and investigating Trump's political rival Joe Biden was something they'd owed him to fix that wrong, said Bill Taylor. Then, of course, they bring up, you know, that Bolton's talking about the quote-unquote drug deal that was going down between Trump and the Ukraine. Which is kind of one of the reasons why John Bolton was fired, basically. George Kent says he raised Hunter Biden's Burisma board seat with the VP's office. Kent described in his opening statement his communications regarding Burisma, the controversial Ukrainian energy firm whose board employed Hunter Biden. And then Kent lays out Giuliani's, quote, campaign to smear. In his prepared opening remarks before lawmakers, Kent swatted at Rudy Giuliani, describing for the first time in a public forum the efforts by Trump's personal attorney and his associates to, quote, run a smear campaign meant to smear high-level diplomats in Kiev. Kent became alarmed during the late spring and summer of 2019 as efforts of corrupt former prosecutors in the Ukraine bore fruit. And by mid-August, he said, it became clear that Giuliani's efforts to – I almost called him Giuliani. Giuliani's efforts to gin up politically motivated investigations were now affecting U.S. engagement with Ukraine, leveraging Ukrainian President Zelensky's desire for a White House meeting. Then finally, Adam Schiff lays out what the case they have against Trump. Schiff delivered a sweeping opening statement to kick off the first public impeachment hearing. The matter is as simple and as terrible as that. Our answer to these questions will affect not only the future of this presidency, but the future of the presidency itself and what kind of conduct or misconduct the American people may come to expect from their commander in chief. Then Nunes called career diplomats testifying were part of a quote unquote politicized bureaucracy. And that was basically it for the first day. So yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of bullshit, yeah. Basically, from the Republicans.
Yeah. Then we get into day two.
Yeah, where the one key witness was Marie Yovanovitch.
Yeah.
Who was the Ukrainian ambassador, former Ukrainian ambassador.
Yeah, and I believe she actually was basically ousted like early in the Trump presidency, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She had been there for 33 years.
Yep. She accused the Trumps of prematurely recalling her from her post, that she was a victim of a smear campaign orchestrated by foreign corrupt interest in Ukraine. And this in particular, this is probably the one that Trump actually paid attention to, even though he claimed he wasn't watching them, because he basically tore into this woman on Twitter. But yeah, because I mean, again, it's a woman standing up to him. It's like the one thing on earth he hates more than anything else.
Yeah, and Schiff, for a little bit, was asking her about one of the tweets specifically, or a couple of the tweets, of him attacking her, you know, while she's doing this, and kind of pointing out that this is witness intimidation, which is illegal.
Yeah, of course.
I love how he's committing impeachable infractions during an impeachment hearing.
Yes.
Yeah. And
this is getting fucking meta.
Yeah. Then he admitted he watched some of the hearings, but he denies witness tampering. Then after 6 hours, it all sort of wraps up. And
Schiff's basically citing, like, I have freedom of speech. It's like, yeah, but not to intimidate people that are testifying against you.
And then after it was over, Schiff gave a sort of mini speech and then adjourned the meeting, even though I think one of the Republicans kept trying to keep talking, saying, you know, you're making suggestions about this side of the aisle. We should be able to respond. And Schiff, of course, was having none of it. And then there was a standing applause. And that's just the first 2 days.
Yeah.
Seat belts.
Yep. Oh, it's going to get fun from here on out. All right, so that's part of the impeachment stuff. So we got another big story that happened. You guys remember Roger Stone?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, he's going to prison.
Yes, he is.
He was found guilty of, amongst other things, lying to Congress, witness intimidation, and a whole litany of other shit. It was like six counts.
Seven counts. Let's see. Five counts of lying to Congress. Mm-hmm. One of witness tampering and one of obstructing a congressional committee proceeding.
Yep.
Among other things, he misled Congress about his communications with Trump campaign officials in 2016. Yeah, it's a conclusion to one of the highest profile prosecutions to emerge from the Mueller investigation. Case that began with one of Trump's most vocal supporters arrested during a pre-dawn raid as the special counsel's investigation wound down, and since then has gradually revealed new information about the Trump campaign's positive reception to foreign interference in 2016 U.S. election. And yeah, this guy is a real piece of work.
He's a piece of shit is what he is. I mean, this guy is like – there are at least like three figures in modern American politics that are basically the satanic trinity as far as I'm concerned. There's Roy Cohn, Lee Atwater, and this guy.
Yeah, he often looks like the Penguin.
Yeah.
He's trying to be the Penguin. Mm-hmm. And also, doesn't he not have a Nixon
tattoo? He has tattoo a Nixon on? Tattoo on the small of his back.
Like in the middle of his back.
Yeah, it's literally like a tramp stamp, yeah.
So Nixon's finally going to prison in a way, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little piece of Nixon goes with him.
Yeah.
And it's one of those kind of tattoos. It's like, this is not a place people put like their first and only tattoo.
No.
Right below their neck on their back.
Yeah.
And also, it's a fucking Nixon tattoo.
Yeah.
Which just says Roger everything.
Stone, for those who don't know, Roger Stone was like, when they announced the list of people who were being accused of crimes during Watergate, he was the youngest person on that list. Yeah, so his bullshit goes all the way back to the early 70s.
Yep. Like I said at the top of the show, decades.
Yeah, and as for why he might have had that tattoo, well, I unfortunately have to mention that Stone and his wife are swingers.
Hmm. See, I was thinking it was there in a sort of property of sense.
Well, he's also bisexual. Hmm. Yeah, I probably should have also mentioned that.
It could be both.
Yeah, kind of. anyway, in other news, Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin finally concedes. So he's now ex-governor of Kentucky, and Democrat Andy Beshear is now the new governor of Kentucky. Now, watch in the next few weeks that the Republicans do everything they can to strip all of the power from the governorship as they can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll have to see about that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is basically a thing where he did the what did they call it here? Re-canvass.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of double check all the numbers that came in and basically saw nothing changed.
Yeah.
He's like, well, there's not really much we can do, and decided to do the finally do the right thing and concede.
Yep.
So, yeah, so Kentucky will have their first Democratic governor in quite a long time.
Yep.
Although from all accounts I've heard, Andy Beshear is kind of a very middle of the road type of Democrat.
Mm.
Like he's almost a blue dog.
Yeah. Well, I mean, consider the state.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, considering what we're dealing with right now, yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Hmm.
Yeah, you got to look at who one of their senators is.
Hmm.
Well, yeah, Mitch. Of course, because Mitch McConnell, right. Next up, in other good news, New York House Representative Peter King will not be seeking re-election next year. Peter King, the guy who saw Al-Qaeda under the bed, and even though he sent thousands of dollars to the IRA back in the 80s.
Yeah, he's very much been anti-Muslim for the last several years.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of basically W's bulldog, more or less.
Yeah, and when this all came out, you saw a lot of people, you know, ball-washing him. not recognizing the bad look of saying nice things about a bigot.
Yeah.
That's leaving.
And a hypocrite, might I add. Because, again, this guy was the dude who was finding Muslim terrorists under the bed while back in the 80s he was helping the IRA set off car bombs in the middle of London.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
But anyway, yeah. So that's yet another House Republican who is not seeking re-election.
Yeah.
Starting to get the feeling that a lot of these guys are kind of seeing which way the wind's blowing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let's see, the Democrat that's running for that particular seat in the next election is Democrat Jackie Gordon.
Okay.
So keep an eye on her for those in the 2nd District of New York.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, some of you probably did know, or actually some of you probably didn't even know, that there were some primary contenders in the GOP challenging Donald Trump. They pretty much all fizzled out. And here's another one. GOP presidential candidate Mark Sanford officially ended his primary challenge this week.
Hmm. Yep. He's the former South Carolina governor. And yeah, the weird thing is when he ended this, he did like a little stunt where he had like a $1 trillion check.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't figure out what that was for.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just, yeah, there's a picture of it in this article. It says pay to the order of burden of future generations, $1 trillion, taxpayer deficit. Okay. I guess
mm-hmm.
It says Republican presidential candidate, former South Carolina governor, Mark Sanford holds a large check representing the national debt as he holds a news conference in front of the state house Tuesday. Sanford announced he's ending his 2020 presidential bid, Senator's Republican primary challenge to President Trump on warnings about the national debt. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that explains it a little bit.
Yeah. To be completely frank. Yeah. By the way, to be completely frank, debt hawks in the U.S. are among the most cynical of politicos in America.
Hmm.
Yeah. And the picture of an old white dude with a $1 trillion check is also.
Great optics very, there, Mark.
Yeah. It's very meme-worthy there.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, just replace everything on that check with something, whatever supports your message.
Yeah. Hey.
Vladimir Putin right. For yeah. Helping me win the election in 2016.
Yeah. All right. Next up, former Massachusetts Governor Devil Patrick has officially joined the Democratic presidential race. Why?
Yep. Why he seems to go in for the Pete Buttigieg route of being the middle-of-the-road guy.
But we've already got the middle-of-the-road guy. It's Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah, but this guy...
I don't know if you've noticed, but he ain't doing so well right now.
No.
Yeah. But he's very much coming in and being like... let's see. I'm trying to find some of the stuff, but very much being against Medicare for all. Let's see. Right. Okay. Here we go. Right now, we have a really talented, really gifted, and a very hardworking and heart sacrificing field of Democratic candidates. Many of them my personal friends, but we seem to be migrating to on the one camp, sort of nostalgia. It's Joe Biden. Let's just get rid, if you will, of the incumbent president, and we can go back to doing what we used to do. Or, you know, it's our way, our big idea, or no way. That's Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. And neither of those, it seems to me, seizes the moment to pull the nation together and bring some humility that, frankly, we have a lot of ideas, but no one candidate, no one party has a corner on all the best ideas.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Nice story. Tell it to Reader's Digest.
Yeah.
Tone, tone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the position being like, both of you are too extreme. I want to be the milquetoast guy, but I'm also black, so I'm sort of progressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this isn't going to work out so good.
Yeah.
Never mind the fact that nobody knew who he was if they were from outside of Massachusetts.
Hmm.
Yeah. Next up, some more good news. You know, so a bunch of the people from Sandy Hook shooting victims and their families, they decided to have a class action lawsuit against Remington,
yeah,
the arms manufacturers. And so that case went all the way up to the Supreme Court this week, and the Supreme Court decided they were going to let it go through. So,
yep.
Oh, so a arms manufacturer is actually going to have to hear a legal case.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, the justice rejected an appeal from Remington Arms that argued it should be shielded by a 2005 federal law preventing most lawsuits against firearms manufacturers when their products are used in crimes.
What was the vote?
Trying to see if they mentioned the specific here. Connecticut Supreme Court earlier ruled 4-3 the lawsuit could proceed for now. Let's see if they mentioned. I don't think they do.
Well, whatever it was a large enough majority that they were able to reject it. So,
yeah.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's going to have some implications, too, especially if that lawsuit succeeds, because holy crap.
Yeah. The lawsuit says the Madison, North Carolina-based company should never have sold a weapon as dangerous as the Bushmaster AR-15-style rifle to the public.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems reasonable, because that's been generally the one weapon that's been used in most of these shootings.
Yeah. So, about, you know, after this, it means, like, Colt and, you know, frickin', Lockheed Martin and all those guys are also liable to face lawsuits, too, in the future.
Hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, so... Next up, can I just say that gender reveals parties are stupid?
Oh, yeah. Like it's fine to have a little party.
Yeah.
It's fine, but not, we got to do something big.
Yeah. I mean, they're called baby showers. We already do them.
Yeah. It's
yeah, but that's boring.
Yeah.
We can't threaten people's lives with that.
No. Even the woman who helped sort of start the whole trend has said that she really regrets what she started.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this week a gender reveal stunt led to a plane crashing shortly after dumping colored water.
Yeah, so there's a report on this plane crash that happened in West Texas. Mm-hmm. It occurred when the pilot's crop duster stalled out after dumping hundreds of gallons of pink water during a couple's gender reveal celebration. One passenger suffered minor injuries when the plane crashed September 7th near the town of Turkey, about 260 miles northwest of Dallas.
Hmm.
National Transportation Safety Board report released Thursday says a pilot dumped about 350 gallons of pink water from the aircraft, which then stalled and crashed. And last month an Iowa woman was killed when a homemade device that was meant to spray colorful powder into the air instead exploded like a pipe bomb.
God damn it, people.
Yeah, so that was looking at the article for that. Authorities say an Iowa family's attempted a gender reveal party for a soon-to-be-born baby went horribly wrong when a homemade device. Again, homemade device.
Ugh.
Not like getting some sort of professional that can make like a simple like popper or something like that.
Wouldn't this basically count as like an IED?
I would assume so. Meant to discharge colored powder, instead exploded like a pipe bomb, killing a 56-year-old relative, which is going to put a real damper on that baby, the birth.
Yeah.
Like, we lost a relative because of you.
Jesus Christ. No, actually,
she was 45 feet away from it. So Jesus
Christ.
That's incredible power to kill somebody that far away with shrapnel. So she died instantly when debris struck her head Saturday before flying another 432 feet and landing in a nearby field in rural Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
About 35 miles southeast of Des Moines.
What the hell was in this powder?
Let me guess.
Family members. Family members have been experimenting with explosives in the hopes of posting a colorful announcement on social media, authorities said. They welded a metal cylinder to a stand and packed it with gunpowder. They think strongly said.
Made a stick of dynamite is what they
did. with metal instead of cardboard.
They literally made a pipe bomb is what they did.
Yeah, they taped covering the top of the cylinder caused it to detonate like a pipe bomb. They wanted to shoot out, but they covered the part that was supposed to come out.
Jesus Christ. You know, for the future generation, okay, I just have a message for you all, okay? If you find out ever that your parents did a gender reveal stunt, disown them immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell them they're not allowed to throw parties for you anymore without your
expressed legal supervision. And written consent.
Yeah.
Without your supervision.
Yeah.
And a police officer present at all times.
Yeah. And they have the right to stop it at any time for any reason.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Just tell people it's a boy or a girl. Jesus Christ.
It's not that hard. Yeah.
It costs nothing and everybody's just as happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even more so because nobody died.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or was maimed in the process.
I'm telling y'all, suburban white people are on some shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you're bored and your life has nothing terrible going on. You're like, we got to blow something up to celebrate this.
We need
this
drama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. In other funny, hilarious irony and karma news, the city council in Venice. For those who don't know, Italy is kind of dealing with some flooding issues right now.
Yeah.
The city of Venice in particular, but their leaders are also complete dipshit.
Mm-hmm.
So moments after the Venice City Council rejected climate change measures, they had to flee the building because the room was flooded.
Life comes at you fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the worst flooding the city has seen in more than 50 years. I wonder why. The council chamber in Farofini Palace started taking water around 10 p.m. local time as councilors were debating the 2020 regional budget. Ironically, the chamber was flooded 2 minutes after the Majority League, Brothers of Italy, and Forza Italia parties rejected our amendments to tackle climate change. They had major flooding, which that city is going to be one of the first to go under as a result of the flooding.
Mm.
That's going to happen as the ice caps and all that are melting because it's literally built on the water.
Yeah.
Among the rejected amendments were measures to fund renewable sources to replace diesel buses with more efficient, less polluting ones, scrap polluting stoves, and reduce the impact of plastics. Zanoni went on to accuse Veneto regional president Luca Zaia, who is a member of Matteo Salvini's far-right League party, presenting a budget with no concrete actions to combat climate change. And so, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe now you'll take the threat seriously when you're going to lose tons of homes and businesses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not that far off from the whole city being under.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe a year or two away from that.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. Venice was already living on borrowed time for a few centuries now. I mean, it's a city built on top of water. It's going to get swallowed eventually.
It's like the people here that live in areas that get flooded all the time but never move because there's federal insurance that helps them paid for, you know, repairs or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, that's the Earth's way of saying, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Go live in the hills where it's not going to flood for a longer time.
Yeah.
Instead of losing stuff constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next up in television sports news, NHL commentator Don Cherry was fired from Sportsnet after making some rather racist comments on TV.
It was a matter of time.
All right, Pat, you're going to have to explain this one.
Well, he routinely got in trouble for making various comments on various issues that have nothing to do with hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And some of his sentiments toward hockey themselves have been suspect at best. He's a good hockey mind, but he just I think he just had too broad of a of territory that he was allowed to cover on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And something like this was bound to happen sooner or later anyway. By the same token, the guy's 85. So,
it's like, dude, it's time to retire.
Yeah. I mean, he's done pretty much everything there is to do in the hockey business. His political sentiments have proven to be anachronistic at best.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this isn't the first time that he's gotten in hot water basically, in this case, criticizing non-Canadians for not being Canadian enough.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, Canadian immigrants, I should say. And, yeah, with it's 2019, you can't do that. And, you know, it kind of is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But we could dedicate a whole show to his controversies over the years.
Yeah. So, Phil, what's the deal with the poppies?
Isn't that the Remembrance Day stuff?
Yeah. For veterans of Flanders Field.
Yeah, so you guys know how we have Veterans Day here. Well, mm-hmm. Remembrance Day is what the rest of the world uses.
Yeah.
We basically took what was supposed to be a solemn day of remembrance of the cost that war has on human life, and we turned it into military bootlicking, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically.
Yeah,
that's what the poppy is for.
Mm.
And it needs to be pointed out, it is kind of controversial still in Canada because some people kind of think of it as more like military posturing than any kind of actual, regret or remorse for anything that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I think,
granted, the guy who wrote in Flanders Field was a soldier who basically at the very end of that poem says, "Hey, we're dead. Now you need to take our guns and kill the bastards." So,
okay,
sirrah, sirrah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, the worst thing is Cherry did not apologize for what he said.
Nope. He doubled down.
Like, yeah, which is like, all right, well, there's not much else to do, but get rid of you.
Yeah.
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 Like, look, dude, we were getting ready to give you a chance here. And
is there a quote there of what he said? I'm just trying to look through it.
He said, "I know what I said and I meant it. Everybody in Canada should wear a poppy to honor our fallen soldiers."
Hmm.
Well, that was when he doubled down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The original thing, I don't think they mention it here.
Yeah. I've seen it, but I don't remember it. Yeah. I couldn't quote it verbatim.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Now, next up in what will become future Sony Animation and or Pixar and or Walt Disney Animation Studios movie material. You guys remember Hurricane Dorian, right?
Yeah.
Came over, it smacked into, what was it, North Carolina or South Carolina?
North Carolina.
North Carolina.
It wasn't Alabama, that's true.
No.
Yeah.
It was in September, came in, and over in North Carolina, there's a place called Cedar Island, which is like a coastal fishing community, and there's a group of like wild horses and cattle that live on the island, and then the hurricane came and with a huge just surge of water, and it was thought that most of the animals were presumed dead, and you know, some of the horses' bodies did begin washing ashore, but apparently three of the lost cows actually survived and
swam something like 4 or 5 miles to get to a different island.
Yep.
Nearby.
Yeah, let's see. When Hurricane Dorian crashed into North Carolina in September of this year, a group of wild horses and cattle that lived on Cedar Island, a coastal fishing community, were swept away by a powerful rush of water. Animals were all assumed dead. In fact, in the weeks after the Category 1 storm, the bodies of some of the horses began washing ashore. But in a surprising and happy twist, three of the lost cows have been spotted munching on grass at the Cape Lookout National Seashore, which is a stress of the Outer Banks Barrier Islands that sit off North Carolina's coast. According to Mark Price of the Charlotte Observer, officials believe the brave bovine swam between 4 or 5 miles to get there.
Oh, yeah. Some hardcore cows.
Yeah.
The first cow showed up about one day later. The weird way they write this is I thought they said the cow's name was B.G. Horvat. I was like, oh, that's an awesome name for a horse. But that's just the person you're talking to here. The other two showed up a few weeks later. Woody Hancock, the caretaker of the cows and horses, helped identify them. And now they're back on they're on North Core Island, which is part of the National Seashore.
A few weeks later?
Yep.
What the hell have they been doing?
Swimming.
Well, either swimming or I'm guessing there was like a couple of sandbars or stuff where they could have temporarily rested on.
Yeah, hung out or something. That's...
Like I said, future movie material right there.
Yep.
I'd go see it, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
It's the cow version of Finding Nemo.
Yeah. Yeah, so. All right. Next up, another happy news. The rare mouse deer, which was last seen 30 years ago, is alive again. The species has been rediscovered within Vietnam.
Yep. It's also known as the silver-backed chevrotain.
Mm-hmm.
They last had seen it in 1990, but just found it kind of recently in the northwestern jungle of Vietnam for the first time in about 30 years.
Hmm. So they've been probably hanging out there for a good long time, just staying out of sight.
Pretty much. Which is kind of like, isn't that sort of like what happened to the species of walking fish that they thought was like extinct for like millions of years, and then it started showing off the coast of Asia or something?
Could be.
Yeah, maybe.
It's weird because this has been happening rather infrequently for the last couple decades, as these lost species that people thought were extinct suddenly reappearing in the wild again.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think some of it's just them retreating into forests and such where humans don't go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
that's
people
right.
Aren't really looking for
this
them.
Is Vietnam we're talking about, and what were some things that were happening in Vietnam a little 30 years ago?
Hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they kind of potentially started seeing these things and used that to justify putting up about over 30 motion-activated cameras nearby forest habitats to kind of get more footage of these things to confirm that they were still around.
Yep. I gotta say, they actually picked a good country to live in. Mm. Vietnam's actually pretty awesome. I know a guy who actually lives there. He's a expat who lives in Vietnam, and he's like, "Oh yeah, man, it's pretty awesome here.
Hmm.
Food's awesome, the people are nice." But now in tech news, Motorola recently revealed their new foldable Razr Android phone.
Hmm. Yeah, I love it. It looks sweet.
Yeah, it no longer has the like crease that the other foldable phone they have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of just opens up like the classic Razr.
Yeah.
Just to reveal that it's like a normal Android screen.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's the cheapest of the foldables. That's...
Which is not exactly cheap in itself. It's going to be out January 2020 for about $1,500.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
See, 6.2-inch POLED display. Let's see, running resolution of 2142x876.
Hmm.
Comes with the Snapdragon 710 processor.
Okay, so this is actually a pretty mid-range phone.
Yeah, as far as 6 gigs of memory, 128 gigs of storage, internal storage, no expansion. 2,500 milliamp hours battery, and two cameras, a 16-megapixel rear camera and 5-megapixel front-facing camera.
Mm, yeah.
I saw the cool thing is when it's folded, you can kind of use that for a selfie cam.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like where that's the rear-facing camera kind of comes into play, since that's technically on the front at that point. The front of the phone comes with a smaller 2.7 OLED display for notifications, various other controls, USB-C ports, 15-watt fast charging adapter in the box. And it also has like an emulation mode that just brings up the original Razr interface, complete with those sort of games as well.
Oh, great. That's awesome. That's worth $1,500 bucks right there.
No, yeah, they don't have the pictures of that here, but I'll see if I can find them.
Yeah, the Motorola and Lenovo, because they're both working together on this, actually did a really nice job with this design because it solves a lot of the problems that the other ones have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like
that damn gap that the Galaxy Fold had.
Yeah, here it is. I'll put in the chat here real quick. There we go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a nice little nostalgia play there, but...
Yeah, it's pretty well done for what it is doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. $1,500, though, most people aren't going to pay that. It probably, but if it's going to be probably on Verizon, it'll probably be one of those phones that you could probably get on a contract. I said probably far too many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, it's one of those phones that's like mid-range for $1,500 does not make sense.
No, but there's a lot of tech in that hinge.
Mm. Yeah.
And that screen, so... Yeah, I kind of get it. It's still a big ask.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And, all right, and now we're in the movie part of the show. First and foremost, yes, we did get the new trailer for the Sonic the Hedgehog movie. And, oh my God, it is like night and day.
No longer nightmare fuel, so that's a much bigger improvement.
Also, they changed the soundtrack, so it's not as fucking cringeworthy.
Yeah. They just showed different stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's still in there.
Mm. Yeah, we had Salt and Peppa this time and some Ramones cover.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and definitely a lot of good Jim Carrey in there.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be terrible. I mean, I don't think any of us expect it to be a really good movie. But no. It will probably still be pretty entertaining.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. Also, they got what's-his-name from Sonic Mania in on the redesign. Hmm. So that's part of the reason why it actually looks good now.
Yeah.
And then this was kind of a design that they were – the at least the artists wanted to – do it originally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then some business guys came in and said,
it's gotta be greedy.
We don't care about what Sonic fans want. We want this other look that looks nothing like Sonic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, seeing the screenshot, the comparison between the two definitely makes it clear like just how bad that original was.
Yeah.
Oh God, yes.
The original one scares children. Yeah, the revised one does not.
Exactly.
Actually, it scares adults, but so there's that.
All right, and next up.
I don't know if you saw Conan had a good bit with saying they're on a tour, an apology tour, I guess, of the new Sonic, and had a guy out in the suit that just had a big floppy dick on it. Yeah, and as he was leaving, like pieces of the white part of the suit were left on the ground, and then the guy in the suit's like, "You can have it."
Don't want it.
All right. And next up, we got a release date for the Black Adam movie, which is going to be December 22nd, 2021. For those of you who don't know who Black Adam is, he is basically the nemesis of Shazam.
Hmm.
Yeah, he's an early Shazam.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, it mentions like there was one champion that was great for a while, and then things went bad.
Yeah.
That was Black Adam.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
that's... Yeah, that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it's cool that DC is doubling down on making their properties into movies and actually having quality. Now,
yeah,
I really do hate these far off launch dates.
Yeah,
yeah.
Apparently, this one's going to be coming out like a few days after Avatar 2.
Hmm. If it doesn't get delayed.
Yeah,
yeah.
Avatar 2 may be one of those movies that just never comes out. We'll just
got a hard release date for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Disney just put out a little bit ago a list of all release dates for the next 4 years, I think, up to 2023, which the end is like untitled Marvel movie, untitled Disney movie, untitled Fox movie, Avatar 4.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's out, I think, December 17th.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So this one has the director of Jungle Cruise working with The Rock.
Mm.
Let's see, a spinoff of Shazam. Let's see, I think it's pretty much all you really need to know.
Yeah.
We'll just be waiting for a trailer to happen at some point in the next year or so.
Yeah, it's coming, and eventually they'll start filming it.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, and last story for the night. Netflix and Nickelodeon have signed a new deal for original animated features and shows.
So Nickelodeon is, like, actually returning and stuff.
Well, old Nickelodeon, I guess you could say.
Hmm. Yeah, Nickelodeon kind of abandoned Netflix a while ago and started to come back because everybody's got to be on a streaming service, and for whatever reason, Nickelodeon isn't going to CBS All Access because they're owned by CBS now. So, yeah, for whatever reason, they're the ones not being on CBS All Access. So now they're going to Netflix and kind of continuing what they were doing a few months ago with stuff like Rocko's Modern Life, Static Kling, and Invader Zim Enter the Forpus. Kind of making these new like movies based on some of their classic shows. Let's see, they currently have stuff in the works based on The Loud House and Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So those are going to be some stuff they're going to do. They're also going to be working on some new stuff as well. New properties and characters. So seems that the potential to be some good stuff.
Yeah.
Especially if they can get like the Nickelodeon back catalog on there.
Yeah.
Which that'd be really nice to see.
Probably comes with the deal.
Yep. Mm. Yeah, they're saying 60% of their subscribers watch kids shows and movies with regularity. Just definitely makes sense.
Yeah. I'm wondering if this isn't like just an indication that CBS All Access just isn't.
Yeah, maybe.
Possible.
It seems like the one that is most kind of insular.
Yeah.
As far as like the types of things they're getting on there, which is like just all your typical CBS stuff.
Yeah.
Don't really see too much out of like, oh, we're bringing in this new stuff. We're making lots of original content. It's just like, hey, here's stuff that would be otherwise probably be on the TV channel or one of their TV channels, and it's just being exclusive and kind of killing the public discourse of the shows.
Yeah.
It's like I don't hear anybody talk about that recent Star Trek show.
No.
Or anything like that, because it's on CBS All Access, and either you subscribe when it's out and like binge watch it all, or you just skip it because it's...
Yeah.
It's a very limited service compared to, like, even for Disney, it's like there's tons of shit on there from these, what, five major brands?
Yeah, well, all the stuff that they own now, so it's like...
Yeah.
All right, and that's the show, folks. I do believe we have one.
Yep.
All right, so I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, something you'd like us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. You can kind of see it there in the show notes. We got it linked for you to click on. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at RSS, archive.org, Google Play, basically any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. So, with that out of the way, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Felipe Dinalfo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Elogi. Good night, sleep tight. I need to get warm, so I'm probably going to have to set myself on fire.